sure as God made green apples, someday the Chicago Cubs are going to be in a World Series.
Here's the 0-1. This is going to be a tough play. Bryant, the Cubs win the World Series!
You are Locked On Cubs, your daily Chicago Cubs podcast.
But we didn't come here to drink beer! We came here to win this ballgame!
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I said to the Uber boy, I said, take me out with the crowd!
What's going on, Cubs fans? You are listening to Locked On Cubs, part of the Locked On Network, your team every day. I'm your host, Sean Sears. On today's episode, we have Ryan Davis on to recap the last two games against the Mets as the Cubs exploded for a 16-4 win on Wednesday and were able to hold on to a 3-1 win on Tuesday to win their first series since their opening series of the season. They've got a chance to go up against the Mets and sweep them. So Ryan and I talk about what we've seen so far from this Cubs offense that has made us feel a little bit better about things. And while we're still holding our breath to see if there's some consistency that comes from this group, but there's numbers that are making you feel a little bit better about this group. And just again, continue to kind of breathe a little bit of positivity into this Cubs team right now, because it's pretty easy to get hard or to get down on this team, and it's even easier to get beyond frustrated with this team. But these last two games have been fun, at least. So without further ado, here is my interview with Ryan Davis. What's going on, Cubs fans? You're listening to Locked On Cubs, part of the Locked On Network, your team every day. I am one of your hosts, Sean Sears. I'm joined with Ryan Davis, one of my co-hosts. Ryan, Cubbies, 1-2-3 against the Mets, looking to finish game three here tonight. But last night's game, Wednesday, kind of an offensive explosion. We've seen the Cubs do this before, though. I guess, what's your feel so far through these two kind of encouraging games against the Mets?
Well, yeah, the winning the first two of a three-game set is always good. Yeah, even if you haven't been playing well, that's positive. So it's nice coming in talking about positives here. Really, it's just that the offense didn't really score a lot of runs in game one, but they pitched well. Mm-hmm. Jake Arrieta performed well, so that was good enough for a 3-1 win, right? And then yesterday, the offensive explosion, just like a couple days prior, I think I saw a note that, and maybe this was updated by the end of the game, but through their first 13 games, they scored 34 runs. And then over the last four games, they've scored 34 or something like that.
Yeah, I saw stats. It was something along the lines of that. It was really close to what they'd scored on the season.
Yeah, it was like same amount of runs over 13 games and then over four games. So that's kind of the Cubs we know, right? Mm-hmm. You know, that's what they do. They go these, I think that's an appropriate like length. They go about 2 weeks without scoring, and then they'll score maybe for a week, and then another couple of weeks without scoring. So really, I guess all you can hope for is they're 8-9. So maybe that this is maybe this will be a more prolonged stretch of reasonable amounts of scoring. Some of the numbers for these guys are rising to levels that you'd like to see. Chris Bryant's a good example. Wilson Contreras having a good season overall, had a really great game yesterday. Jock Peterson's a guy that you assume will get off to, his putting up regular numbers at some point. Mm-hmm. And Javier Baez, big swing yesterday. So, yeah, it's been a ride early on, but there are reasons to be hopeful. And, you know, we'll get into looking ahead to today's game in a bit. But, yeah, there's reasons to believe that this team will hang around in a really crappy division for most of the year if they can just stay healthy and have the performance, you know, the statistics all kind of move towards the median. Because if you're gonna average like 2.5 hits a game, you're not gonna win.
Yeah.
And just trade everybody now. I mean, that's not gonna be good for anyone. But if you're going to at least put up some runs sometimes, I think this team, it will probably hover around the 500 mark most of the year.
Yeah, that's where I'm expecting to be. I think a couple games over 500 eventually if they continue to keep hitting the way they have been. Obviously, not necessarily the results we saw yesterday. They're not going to score 16 runs every game. We know that. But just seeing some more offensive consistency would be nice. I know Michael Cirami put out a tweet with a stat. This doesn't really mean anything, but over the last 7 days, the Cubs have probably the top offense in baseball with a 151 weighted runs creation plus. I'm sure that drops dramatically if you remove the Tuesday and Saturday game. But in the last, you know, they're eighth overall in the last 14 games, and weighted runs creation at 105. Like, those numbers, small sample size, but so is the season right now. It's at least showing that the offense is getting better. We're seeing them turn the corner. And I the point you keep making, and I think it's something that a lot of fans just keep overlooking, is that this team is still, like, they're just a game below 500 right now. They're 2.5 games back of this division. The rest of this division isn't playing relatively well. Milwaukee's 11-7 at the top of this, but, you know, Cincinnati was leading this division 2 days ago and has lost, like, two games in a row, something like that. This, you know, the Cardinals are the worst team in this division at 8-10 right now with the Pirates. Like, it's going to fluctuate. But the thing is, the Cubs, at least, you know, they won't really be absolutely out of it unless they go on some really bad losing streak. They're probably going to be in the thick of it for the remainder of at least for the moment. It looked like they should be in the thick of things for the remainder of the season, but we'll have to see. But I thought there were some encouraging signs. Like you said, you know, Wilson Contreras and Chris Bryant have both been really solid this season. They look like the Cubs' two best hitters, but Matt Duffy had 3 hits yesterday. That was encouraging. Eric Sogard's had some clutch at-bats. He had a couple key plays in the win on Monday. Jason Hayward got mixed in a little bit. He's still not hitting relatively well, but when he's getting on base, he's making an impact. There's a lot of little things you're seeing that you're getting encouraged by. But I guess, like, first off, how weird was it to see Albert Almora in a Mets uniform?
Yeah, that was a little odd.
Yeah, that was strange.
Yeah, that was, but I mean, good for him. I hope that he does well away from the Cubs and puts things together. He's been, unfortunately, just never the same since, I guess we could just say that line drive and that hit that little girl. That really bothered him quite a bit, and he really never got it going the rest of that year, and he had been off to a bad start. It's so sad looking at, you know, Albert's early stuff. You know, when he first got called up, he was hitting for a high average, didn't get on base a ton, but, you know, high contact rate, hit the ball, line drive. I want to say, I was looking at the numbers yesterday, I think his first year and a half or so with the Cubs, he had about a 30% line drive rate, and then, you know, that ground ball rate just skyrocketed each year, up and up and up, until last year, I think in a very small sample, it was about 57%. Ground balls, and that's just not going to be good for him. Especially, he's not a fast runner, so he's not a guy who's beating out infield hits. Ground balls in general, lower batting average historically, so just bad contact all the way through, and that, you know, that's been his major problem. So I know he's not getting a lot of playing time right now with the Mets. They talked about that a little bit on the broadcast last night. That's not exactly a good landing spot for him to get a lot of playing time, but hopefully it works out for him and he can, you know, at least become as good as the player he was when he was at his best with the Cubs, which was when, I want to say that was, what, 2017, early 2018?
Yeah.
Leading off, making contact, getting hits. That's when he was good, playing great defense. So I really hope that he can do that again. But, yeah, it was a little weird to see him in another uniform, but we've seen practically all of the guys from the 2016 World Series team in another uniform at some point. So, yeah, it's been rough.
Yeah, it doesn't have quite the shell shock as it used to anymore. But the other thing I wanted to say, this Mets team, the Cubs obviously were swinging hot bats last night, and that was great. But it felt like the Mets made the Cubs look a lot better than they are. This Mets team was really struggling. They made 4 errors yesterday. And just had a lot of, like, weird, like we talked about before we got started, that Wilson Contreras double, that was probably a routine ground out that neither Lindor or McNeil were kind of sure who was going to get. And then because Wilson hustles on the play, he turns it into I think it was a hit probability of like 202 or something like that. And he turns that into a double. Weird stuff like that happening. Like, that's more the Mets not playing up to the standard than it is the Cubs necessarily making something happen. But it was nice to see the Cubs be the team that, like, took advantage of stupidness, because it feels like the Cubs are the team that always does it for themselves.
Yeah, that's I saw somebody on Twitter comment that with that 7-run inning, it was like, it's nice when your team does this to other teams instead of constantly just having it done to them. Yeah, that was fun. It was nice to see them bunching up runs and not hitting a ton of home runs. I know Javi hit the grand slam, which was cool. But other than that, it was like death by a thousand cuts. You know, just a whole lot of singles and walks and patient at bats. I mean, that's the offense that I think we all want to see. And it wasn't just the Mets being bad. There was some element of good luck with pop-ups dropping in just the right spot. And that was Contreras double up the middle on a ground ball that Lindor and McNeil just didn't know who was going to take it. And Contreras hustled. I mean, there were a lot of plays like that.
Yeah,
for sure. And there were four errors. But outside of that, even if you take all that away, there were base hits. There were long at-bats. There were patient at-bats. Chris Bryant looked great at the plate, you know, taking borderline pitches and swinging at the ones in the zone. There was a lot to like about what you saw. And whether or not that's something that will continue is debatable. I think if you want to be optimistic, you could say if they just have that same kind of approach the rest of the season, most days, they're going to score some runs. There'll be days where they don't score and they'll strike out a lot, but there'll be days where they do score a whole lot of runs, and there'll be other days where they score in the middle. But that's the problem, is that offense that you saw yesterday that was putting all that pressure on the Mets defense, not striking out, putting the ball in play, taking the bad pitches, that offense just doesn't show up regularly and hasn't for several years. So I don't know why, you know, one game essentially or two games over a four-game stretch would tell us any different, but that's the goal, right? Like, if that team that showed up and played offense yesterday, if that's the team you have, then you can feel good about that. But that's just not who they are consistently.
This episode is brought to you by Locker Room. Locker Room's the first social audio platform made for sports fans. The app is free to download, and once you're in, you can talk with fans, athletes, and insiders in the real time about your favorite team or sport. It's the perfect place to jump in and start a conversation about the league. You'll find almost all of our Lockdown hosts on the MLB side of things. Of course, you'll find as well the NBA and NHL, NFL hosts, anything with an N in our hosts. We are included in that. I'll be joining the Locker Room soon as well, and I can't wait to meet you guys there. But make sure you download the free Locker Room app now, currently on all iOS devices. Be sure to create a profile, link your Twitter, and then join any of the groups, whether that's NBA, MLB, NHL. Find the latest about league updates, conversations. You'll find a ton of incredible rooms with your favorite teams and leagues. I can't wait to join you guys on the app. I'll make sure to let you guys know once Lockdown Cubs Room is live. Download the Locker Room app today. Locker Room, changing the way we talk sports. One reason to repair and maintain your car is to save money, and you can use that for other important things like mortgage, food. Why would you choose to spend 30, 50, nearly 100% more for the exact same part at a chain store or a new car dealership? For an example, a fuel pump for a 2005 to 2010 Honda Odyssey can cost $353 at an advanced big chain store. On Rock Auto, that's $216.79. Awesome. Why would you spend more money for that? Crazy, right? RockAuto.com is a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to RockAuto.com to shop for auto body parts and for hundreds of manufacturers. Best of all, prices at RockAuto.com are always reliably low, and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. So why spend twice as much for the same parts? Go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write "Locked On" in the "How did you hear about us" box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com. Yeah, and even in that game on Monday, there were moments like they got to Tywin Walker. Like, that fourth inning was really impressive. Like, the Cubs should have scored more than two runs they got in that inning. But, I mean, I think they made Tywin Walker throw 20-plus pitches after getting two outs. That's the team we saw really work at bats and counts all through 2015, through even parts of 2017. Feels like they've gotten away from that to some extent, but then, like, on top of that, they'll see pitches and still strike out sometimes. So, like, that's the frustrating aspect of it. But when they have those good at-bats and they are being disciplined, we're seeing them take their walks, but also just, you know, fouling off tough pitches, not swinging at those bad pitches, those borderline calls going their way sometimes. You see all of a sudden this Cubs offense is like, oh, wow, okay, yeah, they're not maybe striking the ball really well, but, like, they just, you know, two, three batters just saw 20 plus pitches, you know, and that'll happen sometimes. And that's where you start seeing things turn around. I wanted to point out Ian Happ and David Bodie, both guys that are, I think they're second or third and fourth on the Cubs right now in hard hit percentage. It was, I think Bodie's at 54.2 and Haps at 50%. They're both having pretty high exit velocities. I think they are second and third on the team as well in terms of average exit velocity, but they haven't seen those hits translate quite yet. Bodie's we're seeing at least hitting a little bit more, but both of them weighted on base percentages of like 360, 370. I'm just waiting for these guys to break out. Have you seen anything from them that's made you think that they're, you know, getting closer to that happening?
You know, it's so early in the season that, mm-hmm. you know, some of this is, like we've talked about, there is bad luck to what they've done early, but it's been the fun combination of bad luck plus just bad. And you know, guys like David Bodie, who historically hit the ball hard, you know, you just don't know. He hasn't put together, you know, based on exit velocity, the kind of numbers that you would think over the course of his young career. He hasn't put up a, you know, stellar offensive number. So I don't know. I'm not ready to hop on and say like any one of these guys is, you know, I'm not ready to say Jock Peterson's right. turning the corner, or David Bodie, I'm going to expect more out of him soon, or even Javier Baez, who had a great swing on a grand slam. I mean, he just absolutely pounded that ball. But it was also a breaking pitch over the middle of the plate. And I think, was it Trevor Hildenberger who gave it up? His breaking pitches are like 77 miles an hour. So, again, one game can be encouraging, but I don't want to take too much away from it and say, okay, so now here comes the breakout. Because the pitch before that home run, Javi had one that was, you know, it just looked bad. I mean, he swung, you know, through a 78-mile-an-hour pitch that was, I think, 3 or 4 inches outside and just swung and completely missed. It looked like he was guessing. Next pitch, mm-hmm. he just absolutely demolishes it. So, you know, it's just hard. It's hard to really put any sort of meaning to it. At this point, I think we just have to watch and see how it plays out for a little while and see how much this normalizes. And unfortunately, that's the answer every year, right? Like last year, early on, even in the shortened season, we had to kind of sit and watch Javi and Rizzo and Bryant all struggle at the plate and say, you know, well, we have to watch and see how this plays out, because historically these guys put up good numbers. So if they're healthy, they should put up good numbers. You know, obviously in 60 games, they really didn't. But, you know, 60 games from now, I would expect that these guys have numbers close to their career norms at the very least. So with Javi specifically, you really have to take the good with the bad. And I know there have been some pundits in Chicago have said things that he's unlikable and, you know, all this other stuff. That's nonsense. He's not unlikable. It's just not fun. It's unlikable, the situation that I find myself in when I'm watching him, you know, completely guessing at the plate, swinging through pitches down the middle, or, you know, waving at those sliders that land in the left-handed batter's box. Like, that's unlikable. Me putting myself in the situation where I do that. But Javi himself, he's a very likable player. So I would say, like, you know, people are getting down on him. Don't get down on him. Just ride, you know, ride it out. Enjoy when he's good and take the good with the bad right now.
Yeah. And I think a lot of it has to do with the contract stuff getting leaked out. Like, we don't know if that's 100% correct. That's a report. Chris Bryant's reportedly been offered $200 million and he claims that hasn't happened either. So we like don't really know what's going on. And even so, who cares? Who cares if Javi turned that extension down? It's not money you're getting. It's not impacting what's happening right now. Like, right. Let's chill
and,
out.
And Javi's going to, if that is true, nobody is probably more upset about that than Javi, because at this point, I don't think he's getting that kind of deal. And we also don't know how many years that was for. So if that was if that was offered to him 2 years ago, so what if, you know, if that's an 8-year, $180 million deal, you know, now that would have taken up to the, you know, last, I guess this year might have been year number two. I don't remember when that report was from, mm-hmm. but, you know, either way, it eats up at least a couple of those years that might have been on that deal. So going forward, maybe he only would have had $130 million left on that deal. So even if he can get to $130 million over, let's say, 6 years, I feel like that's really good money for him. So he's playing for a contract. So nobody should be questioning his desire or, you know, how hard he works at this. If anybody has a right to be upset about that situation, Javi's pretty much the only one, I think.
Yeah, exactly. So before we move away from the offense here, I do want to point out, obviously, Tuesday or Wednesday, fun game. The Tuesday game, I keep saying Monday, it was a Tuesday game. It's important to remember that the Cubs won 3-1, but they only got four hits.
Still. Yeah.
The Mets had two errors.
But that's good. I mean, right? Like, if you win 3-1 on a cold day in April, like, I'll take that. You know, if you can pitch well and keep the other team in a reasonable range of anywhere from 0 to 4 runs, I think you can compete with that. But yeah, when you're giving up the 7-run innings, when like the Mets did yesterday, when you're the team doing that, you're just not going to compete. Unless they score 16 runs. That's the only way. You can't give up 4 home runs to the Braves in the first inning.
Right. It's just you don't come back from that, especially early on in a game. It's just so much pressure immediately, and you've had 3 at bats. So, but you talked about it exactly. The pitching, it has been pretty solid, at least Jake Arrieta looked really good Tuesday night. Zach Davies, he gets bailed out a little bit because of obviously the Cubs scoring a lot of runs. He does leave after the 4th inning in this game, but you got roughed up on that home run, but was kind of coming back a little bit, it felt like, and maybe kind of a quick hook. I know you and I talked about before we got started, but Davies so far to start his Cubs career, he hasn't necessarily looked great. I don't expect him to have an ERA above 8 much longer, but I don't know. None of his outings have been really encouraging, I would say, necessarily. I guess, how are you feeling about him?
Yeah, so he gave up the solo homer in the first. In the second, mm-hmm. I think he gave up a walk and a single and got out of it. Then there was, in the third, he gave up another run. And then in the fourth, I think he gave up a single and that was it. So it wasn't like he was pitching terribly. 4 innings, 5 hits, 2 runs, I think 2 walks, 2 strikeouts. Not terrible. He threw 75 pitches. He absolutely could have come back out for the 5th. And if he had pitched well, maybe the 6th. But that might've been a stretch if you're trying to keep him under 100 pitches, but still, I feel like he was kind of turning it around. Looked like he had maybe, I'll say it this way, his start yesterday was, especially in the later innings, was probably the best he's looked since his first game against the Pirates. And even then he walked 3 batters, gave up 2 runs in 5 2/3. So I feel like it looked better yesterday overall. The stuff was a little more crisp. Ross pulled him for the pinch hitter for Sogard, who got a single, and I think they ended up scoring 3 more runs in that inning. So I understand why he pinch hit for him. I at first I kind of cringed and thought, oh, he's going okay. Let him get through 5. If he goes 5 innings, 2 runs, that you can feel pretty good about that. But yeah, either way, this is a guy with a track record. So he has an 8.80 ERA in 4 starts. And I think a lot of I've seen Cubs fans saying they're ready to give up on him now. That's nonsense. This is a guy who over the last 2 years with the Brewers and the Padres, granted one of them was a shortened year, but had a 3.30 ERA in 229 innings. Pretty good. And with the Padres last year was actually fairly excellent. And overall in his career has an ERA under 4. It's 3.90. So this is a guy who's good. He's a good pitcher. He's in the Kyle Hendricks mold. So, Kyle Hendricks also hasn't had a great start to the year, as he is, typical to do early in season, something we've talked about before, has an ERA just under 7. So I'm not worried about these guys. I think they're going to pitch well. If you can get something close to what you're getting out of Arrieta and, Adbert comes back at some point and pitches well in your rotation, that's pretty good. That's something we've talked about extensively, is that this rotation has the ability to be pretty solid. And I'd like to, put a little bit of faith that 3 or 4 starts from those two guys, considering how bad they've been and considering that they are essentially your 1-2 in this rotation talent wise. Again, they're 8-9. How are they doing that without scoring runs and without your best pitchers pitching like your best pitchers? It's frankly kind of amazing.
Yeah, it's just the frustration with everyone, I think, with this Cubs team, and watching that season last year come apart, especially in the postseason the way it did, and seeing those struggles come into this season as well. I get why people are frustrated, but like, man, that the real conversation should be the Cubs have played really bad and are a game below 500 still, like, and have played like one of the worst teams in baseball. Like we've bitched about their offense for like the whole time, the whole time we've been complaining about it, you know, like, and you know, we're at game, I think this is game 14, game 15. This might be game 16 today. I'm not sure, but you know, like this is so early on in the season, and I think everyone just got rattled with 60 games and the importance of all of it all of a sudden. And now you come into this, you see those issues, and it's like, we don't have time for this. They're going to all get traded. And it's like, no, they're not right now. They're definitely not going to get traded now. They're worth nothing. Like, what? Like, come on, guys. Like, just take a breath. It's
right.
Going to be okay. The rest of this division sucks. And across baseball, everyone kind of offensively is struggling a little bit. Like, do you want to see what the New York Yankees look like? Like, come on. This is okay.
Yeah, aren't the Yankees essentially the worst team in baseball right now, record-wise? I guess maybe the Rockies are worse. But yeah.
Yeah. And their fan base thinks the fix to everything is to get Gleyber Torres, send him down to the alternate site, and then have him be a second baseman because shortstop is too much of a head game for him.
We'll
That's
take him
the
back.
Problem. It's like, yeah, give him back to us. Like, come on. Shut up. I'll play him anywhere.
And that's the other frustrating part that I think people need to consider when they think about how quickly the Cubs might determine whether to sell or not and how quickly they may start trading guys is the market's not the same as it used to be. Even just a couple years ago when the Cubs felt like they needed to give up Gleyber Torres to get Chapman, or when they felt like they needed to give up Eloy Jimenez to give up to get Jose Quintana. Unfortunately, if and when the Cubs decide they're going to sell, when they trade Craig Kimbrell, who's having an awesome season, when they trade Chris Bryant, who's having an awesome start to the season, you're not going to get those kinds of prospects. So the Cubs would probably do better to wait longer before they trade, to let more teams kind of drop out of the race, to let just a couple of those teams who are really feeling like they're contenders, who really feel like there's something that can put them over the top, let those teams bid at the end for guys like Kimbrel and Bryant if you feel like you're going to trade them. But again, they're 2.5 games out in the division. They're smack dab in the middle with Milwaukee and Cincinnati ahead of them, and the Pirates and Cardinals behind them. There should be no panic whatsoever. I mean, they've had a lot of bad luck, like we talked about, a lot of bad performance, but things like Hendricks and Davies and Peterson and Baez, Hayward to a degree, a lot of these guys you do expect will, you know, improve from here. So there's reason to hang your hat and say, this is worth riding it out for a while.
Hey, Lockdown fans, BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Football might be over, but NBA, college basketball, and the NHL are in full swing. BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, reality TV, for real updates on odds and props, on almost anything you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head to the website or use the mobile app device to sign up today and receive 50% off on a welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet online, your online sportsbook experts. Use promo code LOCKEDON. This episode is brought to you by 1010, a capsule collection of diamond rings that are responsibly sourced in the limited edition designs at a fair price point. 1010 is an exclusive collection of 10 creative styles of diamond rings designed by 10 of the most distinctive designers working today. Rings sure to bring joy into her life. Using only diamonds responsibly sourced from Botswana, 10 female design masters have each produced a uniquely beautiful ring, ideal for engagements, Mother's Day, or simply a beautiful conversation piece. They're the perfect way to bring light into her life. They're available now through Mother's Day only on BlueNile.com. Just search the words 10x10. This collection features high-quality fine jewelry that will surprise and delight and is fairly priced, so you can give her something special and truly meaningful. When I was looking through some of the rings, Michelle Fontici, I hope I'm saying that right, her ring stood out as something I would buy, actually. It looked like a cool conversational piece, but they're very cool, unique, different, something you wouldn't see other places. If you're on the hunt for the perfect unique ring she'll treasure forever, you'll definitely want to go check this out. They won't be around long, so make sure you're heading to BlueNile.com now and searching the words 10x10 to check out some of the latest rings they have to offer. Mother's Day's just around the corner, folks.
So the matchup tonight, Joey Lucchese against Trevor Williams. So that's Lucchesi's a guy who wasn't real good last year. I think he was probably hurt. Only pitched, I think, 5 or 6 innings in the big leagues. I don't have it right in front of me, just kind of going off my memory. But
you're right. 5 2/3.
Yeah. So he's younger. He's been pretty good in full seasons. Off to an okay start with the Mets in just, again, 5 innings this year. He came out of the bullpen in his first game and tossed 2 innings and then pitched from the rotation last time through 5 days ago. Going again off my memory, but not a real long game, as you might imagine, for a guy who wasn't stretched out completely. I think he threw 55 pitches over 3 innings. Mm-hmm. So tonight, if you wanted to say the Cubs could have a game plan offensively, it should be exactly like it was yesterday. They need to take pitches. Now, obviously, early on against yesterday, it kind of gets overlooked. I think David Peterson threw 22 pitches in the first 2 innings combined. So they were not patient until that big, what was it, 4th or 5th inning. That it wasn't patient. But if they are more patient tonight, they could get back into that Mets bullpen. Because I would think that, okay, so his first appearance this year, April 7th, 36 pitches in 2 innings. Then April 17th, 3 innings, 55 pitches. He's on normal rest. I'm going to go ahead and guess 75, maybe 80 at most for him tonight. If you can get him to 72, 73 pitches through 4 innings, let's say, he's probably not coming back out for the 5th. And you used up that Mets bullpen pretty good yesterday. And
right.
To the point where they had to put a position player on the mound. So, yeah, there is some hope here that you could steal this final game because Jacob DeGrom wanted to pitch tomorrow instead.
Yeah, which weird, but I guess that makes sense. But good for the Cubs. They avoid DeGrom. The Mets pitching looks really good. Like, I know we were coming in and we were saying at the beginning of the series that the Mets had, I think, the second best runs allowed per game in baseball at the moment. But a lot of that was Marcus Stroman and Jacob DeGrom having ERAs below 1. The rest of the rotation, like, okay. Like, Lucchesi is a solid left-handed arm. He was a prospect with the Padres, but he hasn't necessarily found it. And like you said too, him probably being on some type of pitch limit really plays into the Cubs' hand. And I mean, if you're the Mets and you just got shellacked yesterday and you're already going with a starter you know is going to be pitch capped, like, you very well could throw the towel in early on. So it's very much to the Cubs' advantage to push up that pitch count and see who comes in, because I'm assuming Gesellman is not available. He pitched 2 straight games. Like, he's for sure not there. And he's one of the few guys that can go multiple innings in that bullpen. So they're going to be taxed for sure. So that'd be a big plus. Trevor Williams on the bump for the Cubs. He had his last start against Atlanta. I think that was that Saturday game. 5 innings, 4 hits, just 1 earned run, 3 walks, 4 strikeouts, and 92 pitches. Looked strong. There wasn't a ton of high pressure moments in those 5 innings, but he gets you through to those 5. Honestly, if Williams and Arrieta, if they can get you to 5-6 innings, like, regardless, you know, a couple runs, like, that's exactly what you need. And then you hope that you can put together 3-4 arms in the pen to close out that game for you. But I've liked what I've seen out of Williams. I mean, 5.02 ERA has, he gave up 5 runs against the Pirates in that, like, I think 10 hits. He didn't get necessarily nailed. I don't think he's given up a home run on the season yet. But just kind of got babbipped for 10 hits, and some of them were really actually legitimate hits, but it just felt like a lot of, like, soft liners, maybe some gappers down the line, tough plays on the line. Beyond that, I've liked what I've seen out of Williams. What are your thoughts on him?
Yeah, I like him as a pitcher. He's also kind of an interesting guy. He's very online, which is kind of fun for Cubs Twitter. I've seen a lot of people calling him the good Trevor. Which is funny.
The good Trevor.
But yeah, I mean, if you look at his last, the 5.02 ERA doesn't really reflect how well he's pitched overall, I think. Mm-hmm. And you're right, he hasn't given up a home run after leading the league in home runs allowed last year. But yeah, the 5.02 ERA, you can put less faith in it when you look at his, combined numbers from 2019, 2020, and so far in 2021, which is a 5.56 ERA and 40 starts. Not good, but I feel like there is hope. He's had some good games. That Pirates game, and again against his former team, a team that you would assume would know, really how to hit him. The two games that sandwich around that, you know, 3 1/3, 10 hits, 5 runs. His first game against Milwaukee, 6 innings, 2 hits, 2 earned runs, 2 walks. Didn't he take a no hitter or something like that into the sixth?
He did.
Perfect game or something like that.
I think they're 4 innings, 5 innings, yeah. Something like that.
And then his last start against Atlanta, that big outburst that they had where they scored 13 runs, 5 innings, 4 hits, 3 walks, 4 strikeouts, 1 run, 92 pitches. A really good game. So if that's the kind of guy, those other two starts, if that's what you're getting out of him, and even if you mix in those blow-up starts every once in a while as well, if he's your number 5, I'm okay with that. I can handle that.
Right.
For the money he's making and for what he's doing otherwise, I'm okay with that. So I like Trevor Williams. I think he's kind of a good fit for what they're doing.
Yeah, exactly. And for a guy that is at least showing to have a higher ceiling than I think we originally thought, like that's encouraging. Because, I mean, like you said, if he was just an inning year guy who, you know, put up a 4.5 ERA the back of your rotation, like he'd live with that. So anything better is obviously a plus. But his stuff has looked really good, too. He's had a hard time in moments commanding it at times. But you could see, like, he's got a nice slider. The breaking ball works, and his fastball velocity being up makes everything else look a little bit smoother. So it's been good to see. But yeah, the home runs, not giving up any right now is huge. So let's hope that trend continues. But in terms of hitters, the Cubs really haven't ever really seen Lucchese very much. Lucchese.
And I think Baseball Reference also said Lucchese. So I might be wrong.
Lucchese.
Yeah,
okay.
It could be Lucchese.
Well, whatever. Joey Lucchese. I won't call him what I did at the top of the show. But the Cubs haven't seen him very much. I think that Baez has the most games against him. He's got an OPS of 3,000, actually. Bryant, in 3 games, OPSing 1167. Contreras, 3 games, 1334. Beyond that, Rizzo, 3 games, 1667. I think I remember the Cubs beating up against him on the Padres a couple of years ago. I think the last time they faced him was back in 2019. The Cubs got 10 hits and 6 runs off of him in 4 1/3 on 97 pitches, gave up a home run. I think that's probably where that damage was done. but obviously that's 2 seasons ago and a different offense, kind of, not really. So mm-hmm. We'll see. But a good time for the Cubs to maybe squeeze out another win from a Mets team that's clearly kind of scuffling after somewhat of a hot start. But Milwaukee this weekend, you want to take as many wins as you can, because I think that's going to be a tough series every time going forward. The Brewers just seem to know how to pitch to the Cubs. That's really the issue. But
yeah, and you know, it's kind of cool. Tomorrow is, you know, not to look too far ahead, but mm-hmm. Brewers Cubs starting a 3-game weekend series, 120, 120, 120. So afternoon games. You're playing Milwaukee, and you're getting Brett Anderson, Freddy Peralta, and then Brandon Woodruff, who obviously you've seen those guys, Peralta and Woodruff, twice each already, and they have great stuff. So this is a nice little test coming up, this 4-game stretch. You know, if they could somehow take 3 of these 4 games, that'd be huge. And really also prove that the offense has, in their 3rd tries in less than a month, figured out how to hit Peralta and Woodruff. That would be huge for the fan base's confidence, right?
Yeah, just some foul ticks. I'll take a couple foul ticks.
Just collect some hits. That'd be cool. Like, if you can collect some hits against these guys. But seriously, I mean, your 3rd right. time seeing the same 2 pitchers in the course of a month, and you got shut down by those guys the first couple times, you should be able to bounce back and handle them. And so, yeah, that's what I think we're hoping for. If they can take 2 out of 3 against Milwaukee and then finish this sweep or somehow take 3 out of the next 4, I'd feel really good about where they are coming towards the end of April.
Exactly. I think there's a game plan from there too. And we know once the minor league season gets underway, the Cubs will probably start making some adjustments in their bullpen. Their bench bats might change a little bit. I'm sure Nico Horner will find his way to this roster at some point. The Cubs will start seeing different guys coming in here, and they'll be able to plug and play. But I think it's way too early for you to be making any dramatic changes with your approach, as well as making any dramatic roster changes too, outside of like anyone getting hurt. So let's see what happens. If the Cubs can find some consistency on offense for once, you know, maybe that's what they need to just kind of buoy a pitching staff that'll probably be pretty good most nights, but we'll have games where it's just not, you know, Jake Arrieta's going to have a seven-inning clunker, like our seven-run clunker. It's going to happen, you know?
Right.
There's just going to be a night he doesn't have his stuff, and you just have to hope your offense can either absorb that or come back and make sure you win the next couple games or what have you, so.
Right, yeah. Jake Arrieta especially, I mean, the first four starts overall, the numbers look great, 2.86 ERA, striking out over seven guys per nine, walking less than four, not giving up home runs. He's been good, and that's, you know, man, Jake's 35 years old. I don't think I even realized he was that old, and I'm 35 years old. So, yeah, but it's been good, especially when you compare to what the numbers were with Philly the last couple of years. It's been a really good start for Jake, and I hope he can keep something similar to this up. I mean, 2.86 ERA, I don't think anyone expects that, but his FIP, 3.86, I'd take that.
You still live with that. Yeah. That's still really good. Yeah, especially because he was near five ERA, you know, over five ERA, you know, last couple of years, really close to it at times. And I honestly thought Jake Arrieta was washed, and I'm really, really glad I'm wrong because he's been fun.
Yeah, it's been nice having him back.
It really has. It's like he hasn't left, but then every time he pitches, I'm always like, that's right, Jake's here. This
Do you
so
feel
nice.
Like you appreciate it more, like you savor it now?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. I forget that this is the guy I watched throw two no hitters. Like I have never, like I kind of remember the Carlos Zambrano no hitter, but I think I was like 11 or 12 when that happened. Like the Jake Arrieta no hitters were pretty cool to me. And you know, that's the same guy. He's out there and he's throwing some of this. He's like his cutter slider combo is looking really good. I'm like, oh my God, this, I remember like just obsessing over Jake Arrieta's cutter and slider placement. Like it's fun to do this again.
Yeah. I remember. Yeah. 2015, 2016, thinking about that pitch and how, when it was at its best, it looked like a Frisbee.
Right.
The way it moved, it was just insane. Batters couldn't handle it. And he had that awesome run in the second half of 2015 where nobody could touch him, and then I don't want to say it like fell apart in 2016. He still had great numbers, but it wasn't, you know, Cy Young best in the league numbers anymore. And since then,
he was an automatic win, Jake Arrieta, right, but still really good,
but still very good, and obviously picked up a couple wins in the World Series that were very important, I think. And yeah, but since then it's been, you know, the numbers, the ERA and some of the other, you know, numbers are going in the wrong direction, but even if he just gives you something that's okay this year, as you know, kind of a swan song with the Cubs, a farewell, if you will, I'll take that. I mean, because yeah, I think after him being gone the last 3 years and the kind of the way things have trended, I definitely appreciate watching him pitch more, and I think about it more often. I remember watching his final game in the NLCS and 2017 and thinking that's the last game with Jake, but I was so much more focused on the Cubs trying to come back in that series, and I was so much more focused on, you know, that team figuring out ways to continue to compete. I wasn't worried so much about Arrieta, but now I just want to see him pitch well. I want to see him do well with the Cubs. I want to see Pedro Strop do well with the Cubs, because you know, a lot of these guys probably not going to see that much longer.
No, definitely, like, the Cubs or baseball in general, like, this is definitely the kind of, like, the last round. I mean, if Strop can't figure it out this year, there's no way he comes back, right?
Right.
Unless he's just, like, really wanting to play baseball.
But yeah, I mean, he's pitched well in his little short stint, and he's got the ability to be sent up back and forth between the alternate site in Chicago. So, yeah, that little short stint, he looked pretty good, even though the velocity's not what it was. Same with Jake, he looked okay. So yeah, I'm okay with that. And then we've seen other guys, not to go too far out of it, but Justin Steele looked really good in his couple games. He's back at the alternate site, but that's a lefty that you think could probably make a difference in your bullpen long term. So
definitely,
that's a guy to feel good about. There are a few arms, and especially in the bullpen, we can feel good about. Yeah, so before we finish, I was just kind of casually looking at the top five Cubs players in WAR, according to Baseball Reference. I think there are some surprises on the list. Some not so surprising, but do you want to try and give a few guesses as to who you think is in the top five?
Oh my God. So it's definitely Contreras, Bryant, Baez, I would guess.
Two of those three are in there.
So not Baez. So Wilson, Contreras and Bryant.
I will correct you. Contreras is number two. Baez is number five.
Okay, so Bryant's not
Bryant
in there.
Bryant is. So technically, Javier Baez has 0.5 wins above replacement, and Chris Bryant also does. I'm sure the rounding effect puts Baez as 5 and Bryant as 6, but they are very close to each other. So when you think about defense and all the other aspects of the game, there you go.
Sure. There's that. I'm guessing Eric Sogart is probably in that for some reason, because I think he's scored and driven in runs.
No, he's not even in the top 12.
Okay, then is it Jake?
Yeah, Jake is number 4. So you've got Contreras 2, Jake 4, Javi 5. You're still missing 1 and 3. And if you think about it, you should be able to get these.
Is it Craig Kimbrel?
Number 1.
Yeah, okay. Knew that. And then number 3, it's got to be a pitcher. Andrew Chafin?
No, it's position player.
Oh, is it a position player? Anthony Rizzo.
So it goes Kimbrel, okay. Contreras, Rizzo, Arrieta, Baez is your top 5. Chris Bryant's right there. Jason Adam, somehow, even though I feel like he's pitched like twice. I don't know how he's right there. I mean, this is, you know, war and a small sample from relievers over at,
well,
you know,
I mean, clearly going to get an MVP vote right this year, Jason Adam. But
Brian Tapera has anything to say about it. Yeah, so Adam, then Dan Winkler somehow. Justin Steele from his 2 appearances has 0.14. Pedro Strop is your number 10 at 0.1. Dylan Maples at 0.1. And then Ian Happ at 0.1. So that's your, I guess, probably the entirety of the list of positive war on this team.
Well, guys, we went long here on this podcast, but it was fun talking with you, Ryan. It was nice to have like some exciting baseball to talk about. Let's hope the Cubs don't drop a big stinker on this Thursday night game, but looks like a good opportunity for the Cubs to maybe pick up their first sweep of the season and kind of maybe build some momentum coming into a big Milwaukee series.
Let's go get some wins, and then hopefully early next week we can regroup and talk about where the Cubs stand in the division and a team that's on the rise and maybe going to be surprising in the NL Central. I mean, 85, 86 wins probably puts you right there in this division, I think. That's all it takes right now.
Yeah, and we're upset with the Cubs offense. We're seeing them struggle. They're running into the same struggles they had these last couple of years. But across the board, teams offensively are struggling. Everyone in baseball right now is kind of off to a slow start. There's some teams that aren't. Some teams are really smacking the crap out of the baseball. But, you know, there's other teams like the Cubs and the Mets and a few others that are really, really, really bad at, you know, driving the ball on a consistent basis. So maybe it gets warmer. Everyone keeps talking about, oh, you know, once things get warmer, you know, things will change. That really does happen. I know it sounds like a cliche, right, but just like science would prove to you, as it gets warmer, the ball is going to travel more. It's going to be, you know, players going to not hate swinging a baseball bat. Things are going to start to, we'll see these offensive numbers correct themselves.
Yeah, we need to get a meteorologist on to explain why it seems that when it's cold, the wind blows out, and when it's warm, the wind blows in. Seems like I might be wrong on that, but that's my gut from years of watching Cubs baseball, is that when it's cold at Wrigley, the wind is blowing out, and when it is warm, the wind is blowing in. But what if they had built the stadium the other way? Would the wind be blowing out on cold days and in on, I don't know. We need a scientist. Somebody be a scientist.
Yeah.
Explain why that is, or if it's all in my head and I just feel like the wind blows in on cold days.
Let's get us some medicine, doctor. We'll get them in here. See what they can tell us. Yeah. But, Ryan, thanks for coming on the show, man. It's always fun when we get to talk. We'll have to reconvene next week, and maybe we're talking about a fun Milwaukee weekend series.
Let's do it. Let's get some wins and talk again next week.
All right. That will do it here for today's episode of Lockdown Cubs. Make sure you are following us on Twitter at Lockdown Cubs. You can follow me on Twitter at Sean R. Sears. Make sure you follow Ryan Davis on Twitter at Ryan Q. Davis. If you can't find us on Twitter, just look at the Lockdown Cubs Twitter bio. It has both our links in there. Make sure you're also following us on whatever podcast app you use, whether that's Spotify, Google, Apple, Odyssey. Make sure you're following, leave a 5-star review, and you guys enjoy the rest of your day. We'll have one more game previewing the series with the Brewers, all 120 starts, so we'll have that up for you guys tomorrow morning early on before the game. But you guys enjoy the rest of your day, and as always, go Cubs.